Go ahead and proceed, begin this regular board meeting of the IWMA, and we will begin with the roll call.
Mr. Enns?
Here.
Mr. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Heller?
Here.
Ms. Marks?
Here.
Mr. Newton?
Here.
Mr. Robert? Mr. Robert? I will check back with him. Mr. Storton, which I believe will be absent today. And finally, President Barbeau.
Here.
We do have a quorum. I will reach out to Mr. Robert.
Got it. Okay. And you said Keith Storton is absent today.
Correct. So, including his alternate.
Right. He has, right. That's correct. I recall that. He was alternate was not going to be available. Okay. With that, we will proceed to the Pledge of Allegiance. So please join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Okay, at this point in time, we will proceed to see if we have any public comment regarding matters not on the agenda.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raise hand button, which is located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. And we do not have anyone for public comment.
Okay, with that, then we are going to proceed to the consent agenda. And we will, I'm going to make a couple of comments here. Before we proceed, the draft minutes, we had a couple of administrative corrections on there. Just so everybody knows, the draft minutes of May 6th, that's actually a Friday. And then there was Sasha had a correction on the adjournment time, because that's just one that was hosted by our legal counsel's office. And we needed to get the correct adjournment time for the closed session. But those are just administrative corrections that she will make. And with that, as it is consent items 4 through 12, does any board member have any question regarding any of these consent agenda items? Or any comments or anybody wishing to pull an item? Okay. If not, let's see if we have any public comment regarding the consent agenda items.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raise hand button, which is located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. And we do not have anyone for public comment on the consent calendar.
Okay. Hey, let me come back with another clarification, really just for me. Kelly and Sasha, you guys were going over the minutes of a particular meeting to ensure we properly captured something. Have you deemed any changes necessary to that, to the minutes?
No changes necessary.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Okay. With that, then I will entertain a motion regarding the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, Hammond would like to make a motion to approve items 4 through 12 on the consent agenda.
Thank you.
Jeff Heller, a second.
All right, we have a motion by John Hammond, a second by Jeff Heller. Can we call the roll, please?
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Ms. Marks.
Yes, on items 4 through 11. 12 is part of our regular agenda.
You are 12? The re-ratification of the, remote meetings, that should be part of the consent agenda.
Oh, I think that's item 11.
No.
Am I looking at a different thing here? Hang on.
I'm sorry. No, I'm looking at an older version of the agenda. So okay. Excuse me. Yeah, so my vote is yes. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
That was a yes. Mr. Newton.
Yes.
And we have Mr. Robert as absent. Mr. Storton is absent. And President Barbeau.
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We will proceed to item 13, which is the review and approval of the preliminary budget for fiscal year 22-23. Kelly, is this going to be you initially, or is this going straight to Barbara?
This will be straight to Barbara. Barbara will be discussing the budget item with you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Barbara. Please go ahead, and I imagine you have the ability to control the screen.
I sure do. Thank you, Ms. President Burbo, members of the board, Barbara S. Nelson, accountant. Today, we are going to be looking at our preliminary budget and getting an approval on our expense and revenue plan. So just as an overview of where we were and where we are going, as you can see, we have already completed the April and May items. We are today in June, adoption of preliminary budget, and we will adopt our final budget in September. If somebody could hit mute, please. Thank you.
Yeah, somebody has some background noise.
Thank you. So new to you today is there's a little bit of an addition on our budget policy. We've added a couple of schedules to our budget, which were the salary and allocation schedules, and then also the incorporation of the employee benefit plan. We did have a bit of a change, which Mr. Bobo came into my office right before the meeting and mentioned, of how we set up the budget this year. I'm hoping that it's a little clearer and easier for everybody to read and follow. But of course, we can take any edits for future use. I just wanted to point out that our goals for this next coming year that are reflected in this budget was to create update the policies of purchasing and request for proposals. We're going to review fee alternatives. We're going to establish a model of monthly reporting to the board, and we're also going to develop hopefully an employee training program. So within our preliminary budget, we have different components, and they're each lined out here with what's in each section. So under your budget message, we have our mission, values, and vision, our org chart, our budget overview, our budget message, and our goals and accomplishments. We have our budget schedules, which is our revenues, expenses, capital outlay, where our reserves are going to be in our equity. We have our employee schedules, which is your salary schedule, your labor allocation, and your benefit detail. And then we have the budget policy that we are going to hopefully approve today. And then we also have the resolution. So that's all, those are all parts of your budget. So onto our budget schedule. This starts on page 16 of the actual budget document. We're planning on revenues to be about $4.1 million this next year. Our labor and administrative expenses is going to be $1.3. Our program expenses is going to be about $2.7. We're planning a capital outlay of $385,000. We have a designated reserves of $1,300,000. And we're going to start our year with $2.5. And we're going to end our year with $2.2 million. I've highlighted all those on the side for everybody to be able to zone in on.
Barbara, can you back up a tick? Because we, I guess I'm looking forward to the future years is when we're increasing reserves.
Yeah.
Whereas in this budget year, we're still looking to utilize some reserves.
Correct. Just a small amount.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. So there were a couple minor changes that I did want to point out for the board today. Upon discussion with our member agencies, one of them pointed out that it looked like our expenses were lower than prior year. And both Kelly and I looked at that and said, there's supposed to be more. And upon further diving in, I found that we had missed line-itemizing three expenses. So that was for our website hosting, which was on the consent agenda today. We are going to be in need of purchasing more buckets, organic pails. And then we also have our social media manager. So that was added 116 to the budget. And I also removed any negative contingencies out. That negative contingency was really there to kind of force balance to HF and H's projections. But when it came, the largest, actually the only one was in this labor and expense chart that you're seeing. And the reason there was a negative there was because they were using an old salary amount for the executive director. We now have a new updated salary amount for the executive director. So, and that number is actually going to change a little bit more as the year passes. But for now, we're in the ballpark of what we think we're going to spend there. Is there any questions on these changes that from the board?
No, I would comment to everybody that what I had stopped by to tell Barbara right before the meeting was I like this revised format myself. I found it easier to follow than some of the prior formats that we had seen. So I hope the rest of the board also found this formatting easier to follow.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President Borbo. So moving on, we do have some additional language to our budget policy. This is covering how we're going to figure our weighted labor rate when we need to recoup our costs for any work that we would do for an agency that's outside of state mandate, if anybody wishes us to do that. This incorporates fees for like administrative costs, your indirect and direct labor costs is what this is capturing. And then here are additional schedules that are found in your packet. We have the salary schedule and the position allocation list. This is the employee benefit plan as it was approved by the board. No changes have been made to it so far for this next coming year. And that concludes the budget presentation. What we are recommending that our board does is to adopt resolution 2022-06-02, which approves the financial year budget for 2022-23. And we also wish you to approve the draft budget policy. And I can take any questions.
And Barbara, you have it here, and I believe Pavel referred to it as the preliminary budget, which we need to approve in order to functionally, you know, give you the authorization to spend money. But right. That by labeling it preliminary, you anticipate there would be a potential update in by the end of the year, but what would be the driving trigger on turning it from, let's say, the preliminary budget status to a final budget status?
So what you want in your final budget documents is so that your actuals are reflective of what actually happened in 21-22. We won't have those numbers until obviously we're done with 21-22, which is the end of this month. And then you also want to go through the audit process to make sure that everything is correct. And so you want to match your budget document to your audited schedules. So really the only reason to adopt the final budget is that it'll have all those updated numbers. So we know exactly where we started when it comes to our equity.
Got it. And you're so just we'll updating. Have a Yeah. Updating starting balances, et cetera. Yeah. I understand. Okay.
Correct.
So there's not a substantive change anticipated. We're not waiting on, any substantive revenue or expense figure in order to revise the budget. It's just bringing it up to date with correct starting balances, et cetera.
That is correct. The only column that will change, it says operating estimates 21-22. That will change to actual 21-22.
Got it. Okay. Well, do other members of the board have questions for Barbara?
I have a question, Charles.
Yeah, go ahead, Robert.
Barbara, where's the income that the county is paying IWMA for our services?
That is billings to outside agencies.
And that would, I'd only have
that. That's on page 6.
I don't have those page numbers on
Yeah, it's in figure two. It's on page 47 of the agenda packet.
I don't have the whole packet for me.
Okay, I'm on page 47.
Yeah,
and it's where, Barbara?
Third line down.
Mm-hmm. Billings to outside agencies, which is an exceedingly conservative amount.
Yeah, I would hope that is.
It's those three, all three of those things?
No, the billings to outside agencies is separate from
the 54,000.
Yeah.
And then down below non-operating revenue, it's got the county payment program in there. And you've got an estimate of 30 and there's nothing in there.
So that is actually a grant. That's the city county beverage container grant program.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes. Answered my question.
That's a grant from the state. Yeah, I am concerned about the 54,000. I mean, we want to budget conservatively, but I am concerned that that seems very low, the 54,000 to the county. And I realize we're still getting some historical experience, but I thought we were starting to bill more substantial amounts per month as we got the necessary data.
We are now, but when I built this plan out, I didn't have those numbers.
Okay. And when we do, you know, update the budget for, correct available balances from July 1st, if we have updated information, we would also want to include it at that time. And we wouldn't have to, but if there's a substantial change, because my concern is I wouldn't want all the other jurisdictions and or the county itself to look at this and expect that number to stay that low.
Understood. Yeah, what we can do is at the mid-year budget reviews, we can do a bar if necessary and increase that amount for better projections.
Okay. And a bar, I believe you're referring to something technical like a budget adjustment request or something like
that? That's exactly what it is, yes.
Okay, got it. Because they're all, you know, we're all in different jurisdictions. We probably all have a different word for that.
Yes, my apologies. And actually, at the county, the bar is two different things. So it's really confusing for some, even further confusing for them.
Got it. Okay. Further questions from board members?
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead, Jan.
Well, I'm glad that we have $1.3 million in our reserves. I'm not clear about whether we actually need to take the $300,000 from the reserves because of the shortfall that's projected. So I'm wondering how firm that figure actually is. I'm wondering if there would be ways that either on the revenue side, as we were just discussing, in terms of the county being billed properly, or savings. So that's my first question. And my other question is, what is our policy for the dollar amount we should have in reserves?
So we passed the reserve policy, which was stated that we will be keeping $1 million in for HHW closures in case we have to close anything, and that's per the DTSC requirement. And then we said that we were keeping $300,000 in emergency reserve. So if we have an accident at one of those HHWs, we had money that if we needed to, we could spend right away. And the executive director has that authority to do that. And then above and beyond that, we set a 25% in a general reserve of our planned expenditures.
Okay, so can you answer the first part of my question?
Oh, sure. Sorry about that.
That's okay. So I asked two at once. It's not fair. So
there's always a chance for budget saving, and especially with what we planned for certain programs like 1383, we don't know. I don't want to say we don't know yet, but we do have unallocated funds within there that there's potential savings. Again, we don't know. We have a good thought that our revenues are going to come in at what that is, but there's always a chance that rates go way up in one jurisdiction and we end up getting more from those solid waste management fees than we absolutely need. So to answer your question, yes, there is a potential that we would not need to expend $300,000 out of a reserve.
Okay, well, I'm hoping that we will make every effort to avoid doing that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think also, you know, we have a new executive director coming on board, and he will also have the opportunity to review operations in general. We also have the HF&H report reviewing operations. And so, you know, there's definitely some potential that we would be able to obtain some cost savings going forward. But I think, as you all know, everybody's budget is sort of a best guess at a point in time. And so I think the point Jan makes is very important, though, and that is we never want to be eating into reserves, and especially getting below our new policy level of 1.3 for those specific purposes. So,
right. Sorry.
Go ahead, Barbara.
I was also forgot to mention that part of that reserves is to spend on capital, and we are planning some capital projects as well. So spending down on the general reserve for that purpose, then to build it up in the following years, you see that quite a bit as well.
Right. And also, you know, we would probably defer some of those capital expenses until after the new executive director's on board and after we are comfortable with our revenue and expense status, but they are budgeted. You know, we needed to include them in the budget for budgeting purposes.
Correct.
So, okay. Any other questions from the board?
Yeah, Charles, I have a question.
Sure, Jeff, go ahead.
Jeff Heller, Morro Bay. Capital outlay question. Okay. And I'm looking at the $200,000 that we have budgeted for the foundation work at Oso Street. And I'm just wondering if this is something, given the fact that construction costs are going up and this is kind of an estimate, should we be discussing whether or not we want to do this or whether we want to sell the building and look to lease space in the area instead? And I know we've discussed it off and on, but have we made a final decision on this? This is a question for the board. And then Barbara, I just wanted to tell you the format is great. Very, very easy to digest. I appreciate your work on it.
Thank you.
Jeff, short answer, no, we've not made a decision on that. As you noted, we've discussed it kind of off and on occasion,
right.
Not going into great detail, with some, brief discussion of there would be an option of considering everything from, selling the building and buying something else to fixing it up first to, a couple other options. And we even potentially, I think, had a potential committee of John Hammond and someone else. I'm not sure if it was Robert or who it was that was might have helped us look into some of those possibilities. The important thing here is that we include in the budget some expenditure based on some, I believe it was an old estimate provided by somebody, who took a quick look at it. As you mentioned, with what's happening with construction costs, when somebody really gets looking into something in depth, your $200,000 could become $500,000.
It's pretty easily. Yeah.
Or if you're very lucky, it could turn out to be $100,000, So
yeah. Important
thing is was putting something in the budget for it.
Gotcha.
And then it's another item, though, that I think it would make sense to wait for the new executive director to get on board and make some assessments of both of our, our staffing, our space needs, what some of the alternatives are, and then bring it to the board for any clarification.
Sounds good. That's my question. Thank you, Charles.
Okay. Scott Newton, you're highlighted. Did you want to say something?
Yes. Question regarding figure 21, which is public outreach and education.
Mm-hmm.
And under that, AB 1826, public outreach and education, Do we receive any grants or funding back to offset that expense?
We do. Currently, what we use that city-county grant, which you noted was only $30,000, but that those funds tend to go towards that public outreach and education, specifically for school education programs.
Okay. And so when I look at the future budgets and I see it kind of drops off, it drops down 23, 24, and 24, 25. Mm-hmm. Is that because we're reducing the amount of spending because we're only focusing on what's required, or what's driving that number down?
That was a figure given to us. Let me think. Hold on.
And to be clear, Scott, you're looking at there's a big bump up in 22, 23, and then it goes back and it goes down substantially and levels out?
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay. So that is where we added in our those three items that we had forgotten out of this budget.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what's happening at 22, 23. 23, 24, I'm hoping we don't have to buy as many organic sales. But I don't know at this point what the plan is for those pails. We are going to need to do something with our website, but there's a lot of questions still up in the air when it comes to future. And you're going to note too that this is where we think we're going to be next year and the next couple of years, but we're going to deviate wildly from those two projections in these coming years, mainly because 1383 is going to come into better light and better focus for us. So we'll know exactly what we do need to spend for 1383. And also we have that management analysis going on for our programs as well.
Okay. Because that kind of goes to my next question. Then figure 18, which is under SB 1383, we have under there a line for SB 1383 monitoring and education. And
yes.
So when I look at that, you know, I guess my question is, you know, monitoring, I kind of think of as a staff level person, and the education I would think is a different line item. I might be incorrect on that, but I just wonder, you know, I want to be able to verify that what we're spending on education is what's the minimum required versus us overreaching.
Sure. Okay. So that 1383 monitoring and education is it's actually mostly monitoring and a little bit of education. So it's like, I think the figure was 70%, 300,000 for monitoring and 79 for education. So what that is somebody going out and flipping a lid. And then if there's contamination in there, going back and doing education based on that contamination. So when we're going, so that is a separate activity than what you're seeing in figure 21 for the business and multifamily outreach program. Though that was in place prior to 1383, and therefore us going out to a business and doing our waste audit and saying, this is what you need in order to be compliant.
So if we have the most perfect citizens in the world, that number could come down if they were actually in compliance and you weren't having to do the follow-up.
Yes. If we had the most perfect citizens in the world, we would not have to do a follow-up. You are correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think also, you know, kind of leads to the question of, you know, we wanted to be able to track like the cost of 1383 implementation separately, and that's why figure 18 is there. But then like 1826, you know, some of the outreach and education is simultaneous, I assume. I mean, you're talking to a business, you know, you don't talk to them about 1383 and say, well, I'll be back in 3 months to talk to you about 1826 and, you know, everything else that's coming along, you know. So, there, you know, some of these things, I think it can be difficult to try to track super specifically. But I also mentioned on 1826 that I understand that CalRecycle is sort of more aggressively pursuing 1826 compliance, and they're meeting with individual jurisdictions regarding that, so that our outreach as IWMA will, on that particular legislation, will be very important.
Correct. Yes. And I wanted to make this kind of more event, these last year and this year more of a kind of benchmark years for any future legislation of this caliber coming from the state, so we can better project out what we will need for any new programs that might come down, which is why there's a bit more separation than you might see. And also I wanted to point out under figure 21 that these two are highly dependent on our RFPs that are going to be going out soon. So those two numbers that you're seeing there are not to an exceed amount and not necessarily what we will spend on those.
And AB 1276 that we've heard the public comment on sometimes, you know, the no single use stuff, you know, being handed out in restaurants except by request or whatever. Is there, is that, that's something we're just going to include in our education on some of these other programs, right? I mean, when we're talking to businesses, it's not significant enough to try to, you know, track any costs for, I imagine.
I believe that is the plan.
Okay. Kelly, you have any comment on that?
Yes, thank you. So yes, at this time we are working with our local task force group and identifying which jurisdictions would like assistance in promoting educational materials for AB 1276.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any further board questions regarding the budget as presented? Okay. And with that, I want to see if there's any public comments on this agenda item, our 22-23 budget.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raise hand button located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. We do not have anyone for public comment.
All right, very good. Then we'll bring it back to the board for any further discussion or a motion.
Mr. Charles, I'd like to make a motion then.
Okay.
I need one second.
No, not yet. I was, well, let me read it out.
Yeah. Got to hear what the motion is first.
Oh. let's make a motion to move to adopt 22-20-06-02, approving the fiscal year 22-23 preliminary budget and to approve the attached draft budget policy.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Okay, we have a motion by John Hammond, a second by Scott Newton. Any discussion of the motion? Okay, seeing none, then let's call the roll.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Newton.
Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
And President Barbeau.
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara, for the presentation and for the revised formatting on the budget. I think that was helpful. Okay, next we'll move on to item 14. This is a request for limited service extension for compliance and school programs. Kelly, is that you or?
That is. Thank you, President Verbo, Director of the Board, Kelly York, Deputy Director. So today, staff presents to you a limited services extension for compliance and school programs. So our current contract with Science Discovery and Michael DeMilo is set to end its budget period at June 30th, 2022. So it's just at the end of this month. And that is a contract for our school education and our compliance programs, which is our business outreach, that door-to-door commercial business outreach that they provide for us. So that contract is only budgeted through the end of June of this year, although the contract is in effect until terminated. So without a budget there, we effectively do not have a contract to proceed forward with. So we are presenting today an option to extend services with Science Discovery while we are in the process of developing an RFP for compliance programs. So on May 11th, staff presented to your board a discussion and a preliminary approach in developing the RFP for compliance programs. And that compliance program RFP is still in development. We are currently working with our LTF group, our local task force, to develop and finalize our scope of work. We are also working with our franchise haulers and with CalRecycle to identify routes and route review process. So this is that monitoring and the education process that Barbara just spoke to in our budget, also referred to as the lid flips. So this is where the staff will go out or our contractor will go out and will be monitoring containers, viewing for contamination, and then leaving educational notices. So moving forward, we have attached to the agenda today a contract for the extended services. And the contract includes two scopes of work. So the first scope is attachment A, that is our school services. And that can be found on page 70 of your agenda, 75 of your agenda packet. And in there, you'll notice that we have up to 30 class programs. Now, the classroom programs, typically, we are averaging around 60 programs. Again, this is a limited scope, so we have asked Sciences Discovery to provide us a more limited scope while we are in the process of developing RFP. The scope would be starting June of 2022, and we have school request programs for summer classroom, summer education. So that would go from June through July of 2022. And this scope would be available until terminated. And that at which time we would then develop and adopt or award a new RFP for school programs. This school classroom program would mainly focus on organics and composting, which would align with SB 1383 efforts. It would also provide online evaluations and surveys for the teachers to be able to fill out and indicate how the classroom presentations are being presented, how they like the presentations, the interaction with students, which is currently being provided to us in the current contracts. Any questions on the school services before we continue forward on the compliance program? Okay, great. So for the compliance services, this is attachment B of the contract, and that can be found on page 78 of your agenda packet. This focuses again on the business outreach portion of our contract. And this would include all services to go out to businesses, door to door, visit them, visit our multifamily complexes. As President Barbeau stated, CalRecycle is starting to come down a little bit harder on jurisdictions. They are looking for full compliance when it comes to AB 1826. As you can see in the pie chart presented on your screen, currently on a regional basis, we are at 72% compliance as a region. So this is all of our cities and our special districts. So we do want to continue to support our jurisdictions and provide this outreach effort for them while we are in the process of developing our RFP. We do anticipate that that RFP will be presented back to the executive committee as directed moving forward in July. And then we will have to develop a RFP for our school programs as well. So today we present to you one contract that encompasses two scopes of work for separate services to continue efforts in moving forward with jurisdiction compliance. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any board member have questions for Kelly?
Charles, I have a question for the board.
Sure, Jeff, go ahead.
Jeff Heller. Has it ever been discussed that the school education outreach services be funded by school districts as opposed to the IWMA?
Not that I'm aware of. John Hammond, you've been around here longer than anybody. You have any recollection of that?
No, I've never heard that. I mean, I think it'd be a good idea to share, but not really. It's always been on our agency to provide that education. That's really what we do, Jeff. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think that the answer really, Jeff, is that, okay, you know, thanks. The school districts don't have any responsibility for compliance with any of these, you know, trash, garbage related legislation. The premise is that educating the kids helps achieve further compliance. I mean, some might argue the, you know, validity of that assumption, but, you know, that's why we educate kids is the premise, is that they have, you know, they're going to go home and shame you into doing the right thing, sort of thing.
And, I guess I don't agree with that premise, but my kids would come home, I'd say, what'd you do at school today? And they'd say nothing. So,
well, yeah, I'm not saying the premise is necessarily that the solid, but I'm just saying that the school districts don't have a responsibility for compliance with trash legislation other than as a large, you know, any more than a large apartment complex or a business. they don't have a direct responsibility for compliance. So it wouldn't be, we wouldn't get anywhere expecting them to help pay for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it. Okay. Any other questions regarding the presentation?
Yeah, Jen Marks, I have a question. One of the things I really like about 1383 is the distribution of edible food to the food bank. And I don't think I see it in terms of the business compliance. So basically what that would be is, say, just using Starbucks as an example, then they have these food packages that are, you know, best to use it by a certain date. That doesn't mean that it's no longer edible. And I know with the rising cost of groceries right now, the food bank is really needs contributions. So I'm wondering, can you point to me how recycling of edible food waste from the restaurants to the food bank, what aspect of that 1383 program is covered in Exhibit B?
Yes. So actually the edible food is not included in Exhibit B or A. The edible food portion is actually being handled in-house by IWMA staff. So IWMA staff is working with our commercial edible food generators and ensuring that they have contracts or agreements signed with a food recovery organization as required by whether they are classified as a tier one or tier two identified by CalRecycle's regulation. And so those contracts and agreements are monitored and assisted by the IWMA staff. We go out to different locations and ensure that their contracts are in place and work with them to provide the education to them directly, as it's a much smaller list for our tier ones and tier twos than it is the overall commercial compliance.
Right. Okay, thank you. Well, in a future meeting, it'd be great to have a little update on that program. I'm glad we're able to handle it in-house. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Kelly?
Charles, I just have a question, maybe more about the process. Since I'll say I'm newer, so I don't understand all this, but is there a reason why we hire a third party to do our, I understand the education, but to actually be doing on-site visits and kind of be the, you know, I feel like we're maybe sending out we're not sending out the agency itself. We're sending a third party out. What's the motivation behind that?
I think cost-effectiveness is the motivation in the sense of not hiring staff to go out and flip, you know, hundreds of lids. You know, like a lot of things that government agencies contract out with third parties for is usually there's a cost savings primarily driven around the personnel costs doing so. But Kelly, can you elaborate or ratify that comment?
I believe that you hit the nail on the head, so to say, that yes, it is cost effectiveness. Currently we have three staff members with Science Discovery who are full-time out in the field completing business-to-business door-to-door outreach and education, and that is not including the route reviews yet at this time. IWMA staff will be performing a kind of time and motion study with route reviews before it is handed over to the contractor that will be awarded the RFP for compliance services, but it is a heavy lift and it takes a lot of people to get 19 jurisdictions into compliance.
Right. Okay. I just wonder, right, when you're working with commercial businesses directly, I guess what I'm looking for is how do we find out, how do we get feedback on how effective they're being, how they're actually treating the commercial customer?
Absolutely. So in that, if I may, President Verbo, in that process, we work with Science Discovery. So we meet with them on a monthly basis to work with the recycling specialists that are going in the field. They have us all on speed dial, and the program staff, they have us on speed dial so that we can answer any questions, concerns in a timely manner. And they are very communicative with us in ensuring that we address any concerns of businesses right away in a timely manner. We work with that staff again to ensure compliance with the jurisdictions. So we track all of their efforts in our Recyclist platform, which is where we were able to pull the data for the pie chart before you. And that data then is tracked to ensure compliance is moving forward at a steady progress, and also to make sure that we are in compliance. So this is waiver processes, this is the education. There's multiple ways to track it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So do we ever reach out directly as IWMA to any of the, you know, commercial accounts to see, you know, are they satisfied with how they're being treated by our third party?
I wouldn't say there is a follow-up process for to see if they're how they're being treated by the third party process. And that's something we could develop.
I just mean very random, you know, because how do we know if they're being treated in a good manner that represents IWMA unless we do some follow-up?
Absolutely. And I did have one commercial business actually reach out to me this morning and said that he normally contacted his science discovery rep by text message and that he loved the service he received from them and wasn't able to get a hold of them. I did inform him that that employee had moved on and I'd be happy to be his contact. So we do have a bit of intermixed communication, whether they're contacting science discovery or IWMA. If someone is unhappy, then they would reach out to us. And we do follow up time to time with different businesses. And we can begin a process to follow up directly after a science discovery outreach or a contractor outreach to ensure that our businesses are happy with their service.
Okay, I greatly appreciate it since they represent us. Thank you.
Yes.
Kelly, along those lines, I think it's a good question. Have we received many either compliments or complaints over time regarding, you know, these third party folks going out kind of under our banner?
I would say that I've received more compliments than complaints over time. But yes, we have received some feedback. We just do not generally directly seek it out.
Got it. And if it is a complaint in nature, I assume we look into that.
Absolutely.
And work with Science Discovery on trying to rectify that, or I mean, I suppose, you know, the customer could have been unreasonable as well, but we look into it. You're saying.
Immediately. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any further questions from board members regarding this particular issue, regarding this, the limited services extension of this contract? Okay. If none, then let's see if we have any public comment on this issue, this item 14 on the agenda.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raised hand button located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. And we do not have any public comments.
Okay, with that, we'll bring it back to the board for possible motion. Anybody like to step up and make a motion regarding item 14?
Charles, I've been doing them all. So
Wait. Okay, John.
Come on, guys. I don't want to have to do them all. You know, it's.
Yeah. Well, I'll move the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Joanne.
Okay, John. Do you want a second?
Second. Yes.
Okay. Very good. We have a motion by Jan Marks, a second by John Hammond. Do we have any discussion of the motion? If not, let's go ahead and call the roll.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
President Barbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. With that, thank you, Kelly. With that, we will move on to item 15. An item actually I've been waiting for about 12 months. although a year flies by. This is our annual discussion regarding election of board officers and appointments to the executive committee. The executive committee normally consists of the president, the vice president, and the past president. And occasionally that gets out of whack because of somebody leaving or whatever. And I'm trying to remember what may have happened in the past when we had initiation of COVID. I feel like something got extended at one point or another, but In any case, this is normally the time we do it. Now, I'm going to ask Jeff Memory a question. Is this actually in our JPA under appointments or under the structure of the board? I know the executive committee itself is identified in there. Is this time frame specifically identified as the time in which at which we will appoint board officers?
So I would have to look at that specifically. I know it's right about this time of year. We've done it every year. So yes, I probably think it's about time. So,
okay. Because one of the issues we face sometimes is the normal progression here is that somebody comes on the executive committee, they're the vice president. Then the following year, they become the president. And the following year that, they were the past president. I know like when Aaron Gomez stepped down, he didn't run for re-election. So then he was no longer the president, but he wasn't available to be the past president. So Keith Storton stepped in to fill the third seat on the executive committee. But the normal thing is, which I didn't really understand when I got on the executive committee, is it's kind of an escalator, you could call it a roller coaster. You go from vice president up to president and then back down to past president. And one of the considerations there, of course, is looking for folks who have maybe been on the board, the idea of maybe board a little while. And for me, this is the ideal circumstance. Some degree of geographical balance, that's not critical, but it's something to think about. Been on the board a little while, so it's not your first meeting. And be around long enough to kind of move through the chairs, which takes kind of a personal consideration into effect of, do you plan on running for re-election if that's coming up during that time frame, et cetera. With all that in mind, I wanted to kind of open the floor to discussion amongst folks about proceeding on this item. Because in the normal scheme of things, effective in the July meeting, Jan would become the board president. I would become the past president, and we need a new person to step on the board, unless we did something else. Okay, so I want to open up for discussion with those starting.
That's easy. We've got somebody that's absent today.
Idea.
That's funny. Well, I'm willing to serve as president if the board would like me to do that.
Thank you, Jan. Yes,
absolutely.
I would.
And President Bourbeau, are you willing to serve as past president?
Yeah, it sounds easy compared to being the president of during these choppy waters. Oh,
thank you. the big question is who would be willing to step forward as vice president?
This is Jeff Miller. I enjoy being on this board, but I don't plan to run for re-election, so
How did you know I was thinking about you?
Well, okay, let me twist your arm just a little bit, Mr. Heller. We're talking about between now and December 1st, something like that. So
I'd be more than happy to do that.
If you'd be willing to, and the board agrees to serve as vice president during that interim period, that would then give, there's an election in November, so we would have a sense of who else is coming on board, who the new IWMA representatives might be, and that would give us buy us some time to figure out who's going to be the next vice president.
Yeah, I think John Hammond would be a better choice.
John.
I've done my time, guys. I certainly.
I assume John. I mean, because if you've escaped all these years without being it, you're overdue. But I'm sure you served at some point, right?
I didn't have the troubles that you had, Charles. But definitely, I've served my time.
Yeah, but Jan, when you talk about having somebody do it on an interim basis, that causes a little concern for me in the sense of, we bring somebody on the executive committee and then they're gone. And it's why I asked Jeff Minery about the timing in the sense of having it in July always, it has elections in November, whether it would have made more sense for this body to appoint its officers like in January. when, you know, the stage is set more securely as far as, you know, people have been elected, their councils have appointed them to committees. You know where they're going to be for a couple of years, notwithstanding, you know, there are circumstances, people leave suddenly, et cetera.
So Charles, are you volunteering to stay until January?
Well, that wasn't my intention, but what I'm getting at is if somebody would rather, if we want to wait, see what happens in November and then kind of wait till January or something, maybe that would be more viable. But otherwise, Scott, your name has been mentioned by me, actually by somebody else and then by me, because you've been around a little while. You're not up for election again for a while. You know, so you might be an appropriate person.
That's a great idea, Charles.
And then there's Robert, who is apparently not here today. So,
So
I'll put it this way, I would do it, but I much prefer Mr. Heller.
Even I think you'd do a much better job, Scott.
Even if it was only for 6 months? I mean, even if Mr. Heller could only do it for 6 months?
Actually, Charles, I think you raise an excellent point that maybe the appointment time is, maybe it was set initially at the wrong time of the year.
Yeah, we usually in Paso, we do it in January. It just seems more logical after everybody's seated. So,
yeah,
do a temporary.
I would highly support keeping the people we have till January in place.
Well, yeah, I'd have to make sure that would be okay with Jan and Robert.
Can we make that change? I mean, right now we follow the fiscal year, right?
Right.
The budget year. So can we just make this change in timing? I mean, I'm willing to go along with it, certainly. But,
Let's see.
You know, are we going to make the change?
I'm looking at it right now.
Ad hoc, or is this something that has to actually be an agenda item, or I don't.
Well, it is an agenda item here. I mean, if depending on what Mr. Minery says, we could just make a motion to continue it as change the appointment time frame to January's in the future. You know, so when we have it here, we could. I mean, what do you see, Jeff? What do you see in our bylaws?
Well, I think your board should, it's on the agenda today. Your board should make a decision. And if it changes, if it requires a change in policy, we'll fix that. But it really depends on what your board wants to do based on where you are practically today. So.
Right. But I mean, there's nothing in the JPA that says you must appoint new
people
in July, right?
No.
Okay. So we're not violating anything if we kind of extended our terms, if you will, for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. No, it's on the agenda. You can determine how you want to do it. You want to bring back, relook at timing, that's fine.
Okay.
The way it works in San Luis Obispo is that you're sworn in on December 1st, and then one of the first things you do is identify the regional liaison positions, people like who wants to do what and like that. And then the first meeting in January, that's when the liaisons are approved. And so that's when, you know, we would know who is going to actually be on the board.
I think it makes
sense to extend it, but it's really up to
So President Barbeau,
up to the majority,
may I interject, Director Marcus?
Please.
So it's section 2.3 of your rules of procedure says that the officer shall be elected at a regular meeting in the month of July each year. So we're a little ahead, and they'll serve through July 1st through June 30th. But that's just a procedural guideline. So here we are in June, this is July. So I think that your board has the discretion to choose someone today and then reassess that policy.
We could change the policy and change July to January.
Because it's just a policy.
Future, it's just a policy, but I mean, as part of this being an agenda item, we could say, all right, you know, let's change the policy to be January. And then we'll, you know, this one time extend the term of these three board officers.
And bring the policy back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. But I mean, we're not just changing the policy today. You're saying bring the policy back.
Bring the policy back. Choose what you want to do today. I mean, we are definitely in a position of flux with the new executive director coming on board, transition in the past. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, think it through. I mean, the only disappointed person here is probably my wife, because she thinks when I became the board president and started attending, you know, gazillions of meetings, she thought I silently took a job. But things have started to settle down. I think we're through the dark part of the woods now. so I think procedurally, to me, waiting until January makes sense. But Jan, go ahead.
Yeah, after we hear from, if there's any public comment, then I'd be willing to make a motion.
Okay, that's a good point, Jan. Let's go see if there's public comment on agenda item 15, the election of board officers and executive committee members.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raise hand button located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. And there is no one for public comments.
Okay, so this is something that's significant enough. I like to kind of go through each board member and see what they, if they have any say. Or Jan, did you want to make a motion and we could discuss it?
No, we can, however you wish to proceed is fine.
Okay. Okay, John, you have any further comments?
I think it's wise that we hold current seats and positions, especially with the ED coming out new and all. So why don't we hold, I mean, I would like to see Jan step into the seat, but again, maybe we can make a modification to our bylaws that we do this in January at that point. Because again, for the reasons we just mentioned, that it's usually when most agencies are setting up their liaisons and everything. So I think at this point, I'd be happy. And Jeff, I don't know, are you not running? Is that the plan?
No, I'm not. I'm not in.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. No, it's me. I'm sorry.
No, Jeff Heller, for 6 months, though.
Yeah.
6 months, Jeff Heller should be able to, you know, put that on his resume, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, I don't plan on running. And I think, with the, as you said, John, with the new executive director coming in, I think for continuity's sake, and for that director's sake, it makes sense to keep everybody in place for another 6 months. And, you know, we'll send flowers to your wife, Charles, or something to help you along there. But I think that's the best course.
Okay, well, Robert, you're an important piece of this discussion.
What do you think? Let me comment first. Charles, you've made an outstanding effort and got us through a lot of sticky stuff this past year. My hat's off to you. And if sticking around, you know, it's 24 meetings a year instead of 12. You have to always think about that. But I'd be happy to continue until we can get this taken care of. And I certainly have strong feelings about keeping our group together the way it is, so that when our new director comes on, he doesn't have to start educating somebody new. So I would be able to serve, continue.
Okay.
Good. Well, with that, I'd like to move that we retain the present executive until January, and that we also review the policy concerning the timing of elections, board elections, at a future meeting.
Okay. I was going to see if Scott had any comment, or do you, Scott, you do want to comment by seconding that, or
Well, my only comment will be is, you know what, pushing this 6 months down the road is great, because it'll give Mr. Heller an opportunity to rethink his decisions. But definitely, I'll second it.
Okay.
I have to confess, I actually went to coffee with Mr. Heller and tried desperately to convince him to run for re-election, and he's still saying no. So.
Okay. You better send flowers to his wife.
There you go.
Oh, God.
That worked last time.
All right. Well, with that, I guess we have a motion by Jan Marks, second by Scott Newton, and let's call the roll.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
And President Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So that completes the regular agenda items. I thought that we made a quick amendment and added Deputy Director's report and or future agenda items. Oh, we did. There it is. Staff report, future agenda, right in front of me. Okay. So Kelly, I wanted to see if you had anything, and I had a comment on future agenda items or just future issues.
Thank you. So moving forward, we will be discussing future RFPs. We do have a few contracts that are coming to an end. As I mentioned, we will be discussing an RFP, a preliminary process for school education, which we plan to bring back to the board for review and discussion on that preliminary approach. And then that is the only item that we have on our list until our new executive director joins us.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. And then a comment regarding the executive director, actually. As the board, of course, knows, we went through a selection process and we selected Mr. Peter Cron to be our new executive director. Peter will has some things to finish with the county and then has a week of vacation somewhere in the next few weeks. And so he will not be coming on board with us until June 28th. He is, I believe, listening here today, and will be getting together with staff and beginning some conversations, but he will not be on board as the executive director until June 28th. And so he won't be in a position to provide any specific, you know, direction. And so in the meantime, Kelly, as our deputy director, is in effect the acting director. And so Kelly will have complete control in terms of managing programs and supervising personnel until such time as Mr. Cron comes on board. And so I just want to be clear on that. In fact, the organization chart in the budget is actually an interim chart reflecting the absence of the executive director. Normally, the clerk of the board and the accountant report directly to the executive director, and the program-related folks report to the deputy director. But while until Mr. Cron gets here, Kelly will be in charge of all personnel. So, okay, with that.
I have a comment okay. I'd just like to make in regards and welcoming Peter and congratulating him and us too for having made this great decision. So I wanted to say that this, I'm holding it up here. This is the board member manual that was last revised in December 2020 that was given to me when I joined the board. And I'd like to suggest that between now and the time that we get our new executive director, that perhaps staff could review this manual and update it. And also then it would be very helpful for Peter, as he's onboarding, to have an updated version of the manual that all of the board members would get. Would that be okay, Kelly? Do you think you guys could fit this in?
Yes, we can review the document and look for updates.
Yeah, I'll give you mine back. I mean, it was very, very helpful, but it's definitely out of date from 2020, right? So, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I forgot to mention, I almost mentioned that you know, Peter Cron's coming on board and passing. I forgot to mention, because you all as board members, of course, got the letter that I signed as the board president and sent out. And you, of course, were all aware of the selection. But as said in the letter, very excited, very pleased to have Peter coming on board. And I'm assuming that most of the people listening to this are devotees of all matters IWMA in one form or another. So they were probably aware as well. But if not, we are very pleased to announce Peter's selection. And that letter did go out to all mayors, city managers, general managers of the CSDs, and all the haulers and several media outlets that, you know, we identified that certainly all of those that are, we could identify that are countywide in scope. So it should be, you know, the word is out and we're very pleased that it is. And so we look forward to having Peter come on board. Okay, Kelly, do you know what the status of the HF&H contract thing is? Because they...
We do have a few contracts with the HF&H. Are you referring to one in particular?
I believe the one regarding their review of programs.
Yes. Last we spoke with them, they are currently working on R3, which is our programs that we report in our AB 939. And they are working on reviewing those programs at this time. We will touch base with them here next week.
Got it. Okay, very good. Thank you. And
I have another question.
Okay.
Have we gotten any update on the status of the amended, the new JPA ratification process?
Yes, I checked in. Sasha is tracking that, and she can tell you, because she told me yesterday, I mean, we've received some of them back, et cetera. So Sasha, I don't know if you have that detail readily at hand that you shared with me yesterday.
Yes, I do. So we do have Paso Robles has, we have their signature page, Rio Grande's signature page. California Valley did pass theirs yesterday, so I should be receiving a signature page from them shortly. Cayucas has passed as well, and I expect their page to be sent to me this week once it's signed. Los Osos has also passed and submitted their signature page. Templeton is slated for the end of this month. And the rest of the participating agencies I have reached out to and waiting for answers from their clerk.
And I can advise you the Tascadero, it's not on our June 8th agenda. It will be correct. On our June 22nd agenda.
Correct.
Yes, and I think it's on the City of San Luis Obispo's agenda forecast.
Yes, it's on for June 21st.
Oh, perfect. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It is moving along. Scott, do you know when it's on your agenda? Pismo?
I was just looking to see if I could find it, but no, I don't.
Got it. Okay. I gotcha.
I did get some feedback, Scott, from your clerk, and she was trying to get some clarification as to the process that they need to put it on with your board. So she's going to be getting back to me this week.
Okay. All right. Any further questions or issues regarding future agenda items? If not, we will proceed into closed session. This will be a discussion with unrepresented bargaining unit members. So with that, we will, are we going to be invited to join a room, or are we just going to kick everybody out who's not a board member?
So I would suggest you take a public comment on closed session and then...
True, right before we go into closed session.
Thank you.
Closed session has two agenda items on it. First, conference with labor negotiators regarding, as allowed by the government code, regarding unrepresented employees. And item 17 is regarding employment of the executive director. I believe we put that on there just in case we had issues. Jeff, do we have any issues related to that one that we actually need to discuss?
In closed session? But I would leave that on there.
It's on the agenda and we put it there because, you know, until Mr. Cron is sitting in the seat or, you know, I think we wanted to have that agenda item.
Correct.
On. Okay. So let's see if we have any public comment regarding these two closed session agenda items.
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment at this time, please select the raise hand button located at the bottom of your screen, or if telephoning in, please dial *9. And we do not have
public comments.
All right, thank you. With that, we will proceed to closed session. But again, for the board's clarification, are we just staying where we're at, or are we going to get an invitation to a breakout room?
You will be receiving an invitation shortly for a breakout room.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you to the members of the public who are listening. And we will see you all next time. And I would make a passing comment that Robert Enns mentioned is 24 meetings a year to be on the executive committee as opposed to 12. I told Peter Cron that a measure of his success will be when this agency goes back to meetings every 2 months.
Kelly, can you make sure that I can share screen in the closed session?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, and got it. Okay, thank you. And both Kelly and Barbara will be joining us in the closed session as the unrepresented representatives. So. Okay.